Hydrogen Bar. Welcome back to another episode of your favorite podcast on hydrogen and fuel cells. We are very happy that you have found the time to tune in once again. And as always, at first, I want to say hello to my colleague Johannes. Hi, Johannes. Nice to see you again.
Hello, Martin. How is it going?
Quite well, thank you.
Very good. Good to hear this. As the British people would say, not too bad,
not
right?
Not too bad.
But it's not only about us. We have, again, a very interesting guest here at our bar. We welcome André Kaufung here. André, thanks for coming.
Hello, Martin. Hello, Johannes. Yeah, thanks for having me here today.
We are very happy that you have found the time. I know I say this in every episode, but we are always happy that we have the chance to speak with interesting guests, of course. Oh, André, if you don't mind, would you explain or tell our listeners with a couple of sentences who you are and what you are doing?
Yes, for sure. Thank you. Yeah, my name is André Kaufung. I'm the owner and CEO of the company INOS. I always say when I get the question, what is INOS doing? It's a group of a bit crazy and innovative driven people who like to make the world better. And our core product is to concept and to drive technology changes by a strong supporting community. That means we are initiating and managing innovation networks, clusters, campus technologies and projects, and we have quite a good history in doing that. And this brought me also to the hydrogen topic. INOS itself already a couple of years back, but me as well in the last months very intensively. And so I'm quite happy to have the opportunity to have a chat with you.
We are also happy. Maybe one comment, because some of you might wonder now, okay, André is German, we are German, why do we do this in English? Just as a remark, we decided to do it in English because this topic is really of global relevance, and there a global language fits quite well in.
And of course, we are trying to get the podcast or bring the podcast to a more international audience, if you will. And so we thought it would make sense, of course, to do this in English. So I hope it's okay for everybody.
With that, as you said, you got into the topic of hydrogen already quite some time ago. How would you, can you give some insight, some motivation? What brought you exactly to hydrogen, and why did you stay in this topic for the whole time?
Yes, definitely. So I guess it was something like, I was thinking about 10 years, but it's most probably already 15 to 18 years back, that INOS received an order from the federal government of Lower Saxony in Germany to support the hydrogen and fuel cell activities. It was called in a typical German name like Landesinitiative Brennstoffzelle und Energiespeicher, so a very technical, nice German name. And INOS got the order to make a concept, how this looks like, how to get the relevant stakeholders together, and how to boost this technology. And as you all know, as experts, this is 18 years back, and we have seen developments, or we see developments. But so the real breakthrough of this fascinating technology was not there. So this was the beginning when INOS was involved in this technology. And of course, with that, we get good contacts to a lot of companies involved in that, from the energy side, from the generating side, from the production side, industrial side. And also during that times with Volkswagen and some other projects involved, also with the mobility side. And then from an INOS point of view, we managed this association like 10 years, and then We went out of this project, and then during that time we lost a bit the connection to the hydrogen and fuel cell business. We had a couple of smaller projects involved in that, and I was always thinking at times, what a great technology. Why there is no industrial boost really to make it happen, to see it in application outside of a lot of R&D projects and test sites and things like that. And then the funny story is, 6 years back, we were really heavily involved into the battery electric mobility business. And we are managing the Charin Association, which is an industrial consortium with a global setup of 250 stakeholders for battery electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. And as you all know, these two technologies are not, or let's say discussed in the public, not so complementary in the moment. And then I was thinking, hey, what have we learned in the electromobility with this success story of Charin? And what can we adapt to the hydrogen sector? Mm-hmm. Because my feeling is the hydrogen sector is the industry, at least, is in a stage which reminds me a lot of time 6 years back with the battery electric part. And I mm-hmm. don't see it as a competition, really. It's a, there's room for both technologies in mm-hmm. my personal point of view.
So what you are saying is that the hydrogen industry could learn a bit from what the battery electric industry has, yeah, like suffered in the past few years, I'd say. I think most of our listeners might probably remember the problems when battery electric vehicles or battery electric mobility started here in Europe. We had those problems with the different plugs, with the different charging techniques, with the different cards and payment methods. So you mean that your goal is, if I understand correctly, that you want to avoid similar problems for hydrogen now, when considering that hydrogen mobility is scaling up and more people will have to refuel their hydrogen vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's exactly what you say, because okay. My intention is with a new, let's say, association idea called HEAVY, so hydrogen refueling protocols and scenarios for the especially heavy industry like trucks, buses, ships, airplanes, and so on. And this is exactly where I have the feeling the people should learn from the mistakes already made once with the electromobility. Mm-hmm. Definitely, it's a different scenario to charge power directly or to charge hydrogen in liquid or in gas format. Yes. So, but the, let's say the basic idea behind at the beginning, when you think about the scaling up, is the same. And when I remember really 6 years back, there was a very small group of OEMs and some involved parties. And the scenario on the table was more or less every manufacturer has his own system mm-hmm. for recharging battery electric vehicles. And I don't mean only the system itself from a physical adapter or connector point of view, but also for the communication protocol. Mm-hmm. And then the push was there for the organization Charin to say, hey, this is not, this is a real burden for people when they cannot recharge their cars. If we want to make electromobility successful, we mm-hmm. need to avoid and we need to eliminate this burden, and therefore we need a standardized protocol in the best way globally. Mm-hmm. Of course, not everything was then right there from the beginning. We had a Tesla system, we had an own Chinese system, we had a Japanese system, and we had the, let's say, European and US system. And then it was a very clear technical assessment to say, what is the best for now and what is the best future-proof technology, because you also need to get on board the investors who want to build up infrastructure. They want to invest, of course, in technology which is future-proof and which will not be maybe old-fashioned in a couple of years. And then the CCS system with the ISO 15118 protocol was selected, and we had really this success story to get a Tesla on board after a couple of years. So he was switching to technology. We had countries and OEMs which were not involved from the beginning switching to that, and everyone is more and more doing this. China is not doing right now. I would put that more on a, let's say, political decision level than on a technology or technology assessment level. But this is really a future-proof technology. And for I raised the questions for hydrogen in a meeting with a couple of stakeholders, and the question or the answer was, oh yeah, we might have a same scenario when hydrogen is scaling up. And this is where the idea was born. Hey, but why don't we use the format of, let's say, a very big round table, which is CHINE basically, with working groups, with only stakeholders involved, not a networking platform. There are so many networking platforms for hydrogen in each region with each topic, but really to work on this interoperability and protocol standard. What is the requirement of the industry for the protocol now and maybe in 5 years and maybe in 10 years and maybe in 15 years? And this drives me to, for me, I would go crazy if there are the same mistakes basically from more or less similar companies done twice in a time period of 10 to 15 years.
Now, when I think about this, like refueling hydrogen, I would like initially say there is a lot of comparability to filling up your car with gasoline. Like it's similar time. It's also some chemical substance, some medium that you put in. Isn't there like an easier transfer kind of from petrol stations to hydrogen than from charging electricity into batteries to hydrogen? Or is this too simple view?
No, to be honest, it was the first thought I had, as I'm not deeply involved in that technology. I thought, hey, this looks like more like you do maybe, or like you have done a couple of years back with your diesel or petrol car. But when I got questions from stakeholders, can you maybe check this and so on? And then I was a bit more involved into the topic, and I saw, okay, there is already some kind of very basic protocol necessary or some basic communication, because you need to exchange data between infrastructure and, let's say, mobility platform, car, truck, vessel, whatever, regarding physical parameters like, I don't know, pressure, temperature, and some others. And this was the point where I said, okay, is it only this physical parameters? Then you don't need really a very sophisticated protocol like ISO 15118 or others in the moment. But then it turned out in a couple of meetings, oh no, there might be, let's say, more data which need to be exchanged. There might be also the speed of refueling can be reduced when you monitor and have a good data exchange between infrastructure and car, for example. And then, of course, there is a scenario, how do we refill our cars or buses in the future? Where is the payment done? Is it still like today you have like a payment machine or like a shop? Or are there scenarios where you maybe have also contract, and with contracts you have business models between the mobility platform and the infrastructure? And then you need a certain security in the data transfer, because you exchange maybe personal data, you change I don't know, liters, kilograms, and payment is done out of that. So you need to secure the customer's data. And this brings you then automatically after some time, in my point of view, to maybe a demand of a more secure and sophisticated protocol.
I just want to briefly come back to some organizational aspects of Charin and Heavy. I find this very interesting. You explained before that Charin was or is a consortium or a project which is funded by car manufacturers, but also, yeah, like by nations or regions or ministries or whatever. Would this structure be the same for the Heavy project? And what is the status of the Heavy projects? Or is this just an initiative that you have set on track and that work has to begin with? Or is that already in a phase or in a status where you have stakeholders like car manufacturers or ministries or regions, yeah, like who have signed or committed to contribute to this project?
So basically, of course, we took the blueprint of Charin, because Charin is a very broad and well-recognized success story. So, of course, there were also some smaller mistakes made in the beginning, but basically Charin is an open platform. It's an association, meaning everyone can apply and join. There are some gremias. It's member driven. It's also member finance. So you have basically 250 companies around the globe who have an more or less equal pay into that project. And with that commitment and contribution, it's not only the euros or dollars. It's also you need to staff the working groups. And this is the really, let's say, core budget, I would say. You send experts, and they are exchanging with experts from, they are competitors basically, and from companies where they are not used to work with, like an OEM company with an energy company, and also for hydrogen, like an again OEM company maybe with an manufacturer of hydrogen, or with the, I don't know, wind energy industry. And this brought us to the idea of Heavy, to have a similar setup like Charin, and to, let's say, promote this and to support these discussions which needs to be go on. It's not like that regions or governments are really let's say supporting or financing this kind of Charin structure. They get consulted by Charin. So they have the question like, what kind of infrastructure needs to be set up across Europe, for example, or in North America or in Asia? And then, of course, you, as a government, you have a possibility to listen to 1, 2, 3 stakeholders, or you get a cross-industry alignment position. And this is what Charin delivers. And this is our idea, what also Heavy can deliver. Not the position of a single company or of a single group of companies, across industry alignment, including infrastructure, including energy storage, including energy distribution. So the whole value chain needs to be involved in the discussion. And these are, to be honest, tough discussions. So they are not, you don't bring them on a table and they have the same idea or agenda. You need to moderate these kind of discussions up to a point where you have a minimum agreement on things. And this helps the government again to make decisions on, okay, what technology needs to be supported, what needs to be funded, where is a government investing in, where is an investor investing in. And this is an acceleration for these markets.
Which means that for Charin, work is done by people from the industry, and the money is also spent by the industry, or funding comes from the industry. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So contribution in manpower, but also in budget, is pure coming from industry. And let's say the government is getting the positions and the requirements from the industry, and can then do let's say funding and supporting money, not back to Charin or into Charin, but into infrastructure, which helps the technology to get in place. And this is the same idea for heavy. And you ask the question, where are we with heavy? And my feeling is we are exactly where we had been with Char in 6 years back. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But there is one, let's say, big difference, which I like to address as well. In 6 years back, let's say the necessity of such an organization was in the minds of at least some people out of the battery electric vehicle business. And the heavy idea is more with us, so with Innos and with some companies which needs a necessity. But to start something like that, you need, let's say, big involved stakeholders. I don't mean the biggest companies, but relevant stakeholders. Yeah, maybe relevant is the better word. To kick this project off, because in the beginning, normally you have a lot of ramp up cost, and this needs to be financed normally by less members or less stakeholders, which is diametral to the let's say the budget and the spending. And you need to have 1 or 2 years where you need some extra finance, some support. Mm. And we are in a, but we had the same situation 6 years back with Char in, but then there was a commitment of 10 companies. Yes, we want to do this, and we are financing and supporting for 2 years. And after 2 years, we make a decision. We stop it because there is no value or no added value.
Or we continue.
Or we have, yeah. We gain new members and more income, and we continue. And mm-hmm. already after 1 year, this was a success story. There was no extra funding mm-hmm. necessary from mm-hmm. the 10 founding companies. Mm-hmm. After 1 year, we had already, I think, 40 or 50 companies involved. Mm. And now we have 250. And this is the same like we want to do with heavy. We have some, let's say, verbal commitment from relevant stakeholders. Mm. But we are in a phase where we, where also we as Innos like to see from the industry, yes, we need this project, because we cannot drive such a project out of Innos. You need industry stakeholders to do so. And that's why we had an, let's say, going public and something like a kickoff, an invitation. Who wants to join? Is it worth to go that way? Is it good to do so? And we got good, let's say, verbal and I call it a positive email resonance, but to sign an LOI and to sign a contract and to spend the budget with that big companies takes some time. So I'm quite convinced we will go that way, and we will kick heavy off. But the question is a bit in what time frame?
Who is going mm-hmm. to pay?
Exactly. Yeah. Now, at the end.
If I understand it right, this heavy is focused on heavy trucks or like heavy transport lorries, mm-hmm. Not the passenger vehicles. Is this right? And can you shortly explain why do we need kind of a different approach for heavy transport compared to the passenger vehicles?
Yeah, there are two main drivers for do so. So one is the, let's say, the meetings we had and the questions we received out of the market. This was mainly driven by organizations which are focused in the moment with hydrogen in the business of trucks and let's say heavy equipment. Plus, there is already some protocol standardization for the passenger cars. So maybe the, let's say, the time pressure point of view for passenger cars is not so important from a pure standardization point of view. That brought us to the heavy industry. Plus, I see the technology. I personally see the technology breakthrough in these kind of areas where maybe battery electric vehicle has, let's say, not the best use cases or products needs to have hydrogen on board. For example, the marine industry, where there are scenarios with battery electric and small distance and so on. But when you talk about long haul, when you talk about seagoing vessels, you will not manage that, at least not easily, with batteries. So you need hydrogen. And this is exactly the point then where I have also a vision to say, hey, why is then marine industry or airplanes or others using a different protocol, a different standard for refueling than others? Of course, it's not in the focus the scenario that an passenger car driver is going to an Airbus refueling station. But the whole technology gets more cost effective if you use same parts, same protocol, you have the knowledge across the globe for implementing the protocol, for maintaining the protocol, for developing. And with a sophisticated protocol, you can also adapt from battery to hydrogen, back and forward. And this is one of the main drivers why we go for this heavy application. And to be honest, it's a starting point. Mm-hmm. The experience with China was we were only starting with passenger cars, so the other way around. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, we are talking about charging trucks, charging boats, charging airplanes. And I think you need something like a bit like a melting point or like a sharpened scope to start with. But of course, this does not invite you to go also in other use cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you see it as a starting point and you can spread out, if you will, to other technologies as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's an interesting perspective and we'll definitely continue to speak about heavy next week. Or this week, our time is unfortunately already over. So thank you very much for this week, André. We'll continue next week, as I said before. Thank you, Johannes, as well, of course. And for all you listeners, feel free to check our website, which is still, of course, hydrogenbar.net. And you can also use the contact form that you will find on the website if you want to get in contact with us. Thank you very much for listening once again. Thank you, André. Yeah. Thank you, Johannes. And I'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, André.
Thank you, Martin. And yeah.
Yeah, have a good week.
Bye.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you, Johannes.
Hey.